Let's talk about talking. What with all the talk of the risk of appeasing Iran or Syria, and with President George W. Bush evoking appeasement, let's take a look at what it really means if the leader of the free world says he or she wants to talk. When is just talking talking, and when is it conferring some status? Joining me now is Robert Kagan, foreign policy advisor to Republican John McCain. Mr. Kagan is the author of The Return of History and The End of Dreams. Hello, Mr. Kagan. It's good to talk with you.
Thanks. Good to be here.
Now, is it just talking, or by engaging in this dialogue, am I offering you some legitimacy? What I mean is it in diplomacy, is it disingenuous to say about a foreign adversary, hey, we're just talking? I mean, what's wrong with talking?
Well, I guess it's a little disingenuous just because there's always something being traded when people sit down to talk. And I think it all depends on context and timing. If a leader is behaving in a particularly odious fashion, saying particularly odious things, as Ahmadinejad in Iran has said, you may not want to reward that. And especially if you think there may be a power struggle or a political jockeying going on in a certain country, as perhaps there is in Iran, you might not want to reward the harder line faction by talking to them. You might want to hold out hope that you could perhaps talk to a more pragmatic faction later on.
So does it frustrate you to hear Barack Obama or Hillary Clinton or Jimmy Carter say, we just want to talk, and no one follows up and say, well, are you willing to listen? And more importantly, are you willing to change your mind?
Well, it doesn't frustrate me, but I just think, you know, it's worth saying, you know, talk under what circumstances. Take Iran, for instance. Right now, the United States and its European allies have made it very clear that we are perfectly willing to talk to Iran if Iran will suspend its enrichment of uranium as what people think may be a step toward building a nuclear weapon. It's very clear that that condition would, if Iran met it, would lead to talks. Iran's refusal to meet it suggests a lack of goodwill, a lack of willingness to engage in serious negotiation. So I think just dropping that demand would actually be a kind of unilateral step on the part of the United States.
In a Washington Post op-ed, I will quote you to you, you said it, meaning the Bush administration, can seize the initiative and do the next administration a favor by opening direct talks with Tehran. Do you mean only if they agree to the stipulations you just talked about?
Well, I think that it would be that ideally they should agree to the stipulations. I think there is a moment that will come as we get closer to Iran getting a nuclear weapon when we may have to consider opening talks with Iran. But the question is really one of timing, and I think the debate that we're sort of watching is a debate between whether you have any preconditions, whether you just think that talking is going to solve the problem, or whether you need a much more structured conversation in the context of concessions that may need to be made on both sides.
Okay, I want to play a couple clips, dueling clips, if you will. The first will be Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice. Then we'll hear from Barack Obama. And let's listen with the question in mind, what are the real differences between what they're saying? Here we go.
As soon as Iran fully and verifiably suspends its enrichment and reprocessing activities, the United States will come to the table with our EU colleagues and meet with Iran's representatives.
We've got to talk directly to Iran, send them a clear message that they have to stop not only with their potential funding of militias inside of Iraq, but they also have to stop funding Hamas, they have to stop funding Hezbollah, they've got to stand down on their nuclear weapons. There will be continued consequences for those kinds of actions.
What do you think the differences between those two statements or those two policies are?
Well, I think that they both have the same objectives. The question is, again, it's one of the condition of whether Iran has to suspend its enrichment program as a precursor to talks. I mean, I don't know what the Barack Obama's position is at the moment. I gather in the past he's talked about going ahead and talking to Tehran without preconditions, and that would mean dropping that, which would be something that would require, at the very least, a serious diplomatic consultation with the European allies who've held to that position for quite some time.
Going back to your Washington Post op-ed, when you advocated talking to Tehran and keeping in mind that you are a foreign policy advisor for John McCain, in that op-ed you said negotiating will appear at first to be a sign of weakness. So is that why you're saying the Bush administration to do it in their last year, let them take the hit for what will inevitably be played as American weakness?
Well, it's really just my biggest concern is that we if we wait too long, Iran may be so far advanced down the path that we may lose opportunity. But I do think, yes, there is something to be said for the Bush administration doing that. But you know, first of all, the good news or the bad news is John McCain doesn't always listen to my suggestions, but I also think it's a very serious point as to whether we want to reward this particular Iranian leader, Ahmadinejad, with direct negotiations, especially if he is engaged, as I think is the case, in a bit of a political power struggle within the Iranian government. We may want to try to influence that by not meeting with him and strengthening his hand.
Do you think, so you say John McCain doesn't always listen to you. We've heard his comments after President Bush talked to the Knesset, and he was trying to emphasize, not put it in Barack Obama's court, not putting the ball in his court, but emphasize that there is such a thing as appeasement. Is this an area where you see yourself maybe disagreeing with the statements John McCain has made?
No, I think that we do have to take seriously the fact that sometimes when you engage in talks with someone, it can be beneficial. Sometimes it can not be beneficial. I do think as a matter of principle, it's wrong to say that talking solves all our problems. By the way, it's not as if no one's ever tried to talk to Iran before. I mean, in the Reagan administration, Bud McFarlane brought a cake to Iran and tried to talk. The Clinton administration made several efforts to talk. I mean, the question is, do you really think that anything is going to come out of these kinds of negotiations, or whether you need to wait for a moment that's more ripe. I think it's a legitimate debate, but I think it's probably an error to think that just talking, I mean, some people think that just talking is the answer, and I think, as you even suggested in the introduction, that can't always be the answer.
Because if you say, I'm just going to talk, it at least implies that I'm willing to listen, which implies maybe I'm willing to make some concessions.
Well,
you're saying
and,
the
you
United
know,
States should
there
do that.
Are instances in historical times when talking has not always been the best thing. There is the instance, for instance, when John F. Kennedy, with his first summit meeting with Khrushchev, Kennedy himself came away from that meeting feeling that he'd been beaten badly, that he'd looked timid to Khrushchev, and there are those who believe that some of Khrushchev's boldness in the coming Cuban Missile Crisis was due to a perception on his part that Kennedy was weak.
We have to leave it there, but thank you very much, Robert Kagan, foreign policy advisor to John McCain and author of The Return of History and the End of Dreams. Thank you.
This is the BPP from NPR News.